Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the fourth aliyah of the Parsha of Miketz in the book of Bereshit Genesis. Vatichlena sheva shnei asava asher haya be'eretz Mitzrayim, and the 7 years of plenty that were in the land of Egypt came to a close. It seems from here and from the next verse that bumper crops and the massive yields that are being described, the shnat of Sava, are limited to Egypt itself, I would say, that the other lands probably just had standard produce. However, the famine, when it comes, those 7 years will affect not only Egypt itself, but the surrounding countries to Egypt, including, of course, the land of Canaan. Vatichilena sheva shnei hara'av lavo kasher amar Yosef, ayhi rav v'chol haratzot v'chol eretz Mitzrayim haya lachem. And then the 7 years of famine became, just as Joseph said, or predicted probably, and there was a famine throughout the lands, meaning outside of Egypt as well, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. Lechem could actually mean not just bread, but sort of sustenance or food in general. In Arabic, lahim is meat. So if you kind of combine the whole issue together, it really kind of just means food that one can sustain oneself with. So we'll just go with the word food, which I think fits very nicely here. Now, the words in this pasuk, kasher, amar Yosef, just as Joseph said, I don't think they're redundant at all. What I think they seem to mean is that while Pharaoh and his servants were convinced that Joseph's prophecy was true, otherwise they would never have appointed him to such a powerful position, many people in the country, probably most people in the country, thought that he was wrong. I mean, whoever listens to an economist who predicts the economy is about to crash. Now, Rashi disagrees, and then has to deal with another problem. If the people believed in what Joseph said all along, then how come they didn't store their own food? And he says they actually did try to store the crop, just as Joseph had tried to store food. But their crops all became rotted, and Joseph's did not. Rashi doesn't say whether it was a miracle or not, but it's just the way it was. I think, however, the natural tendency of people, of the hoi polloi, of the masses, is to be unconvinced by Joseph's prediction of gloom and doom. So when it actually came about, then they realized, it came about, kasher amar Yosef. Vatirav kol eretz Mitzrayim, vayitzak ha'am el paro lalachem, vayomer paro lechol Mitzrayim lechu el Yosef, asher yomar lachem ta'asu. And the entire land of Egypt starved, that is, underwent a famine, that is not the land, of course, the people of the land. And the nation, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, i.e. for food. But Pharaoh said, go to Joseph and do whatever he tells you. Again, after the seven rich years, the 7 years of plenty, people, that is, maybe towards the sixth or seventh year, people started ignoring Joseph. Sure, he was in power of everything, but, you know, you don't have to take him so seriously if everybody's eating fine and nobody has to talk to the king about anything because economically things are so wonderful. But when the famine actually begins, Paro reminds them, I think here, don't talk to me, talk to Joseph, who I appointed to take care of this problem, because I told you he would be taking care of this problem. V'harav haya al kol pnei ha'aretz, v'yiftach Yosef et kol asher bahem, v'yishbor l'mitzrayim, v'yechazak harav v'eretz Mitzrayim, v'chol ha'aretz ba'u Mitzrayim al ishbor et Yosef, ki chazak harav b'chol ha'aretz. And the famine was on the entire face of the land, which I think the word face, I think what it means is the farms, the fields. Rashi has a different opinion of what face of the land is, so feel free to look there. So Joseph opened up everything, meaning everything that was in these armed, well-patrolled, government-controlled warehouses, and he supplied Egypt, and then the famine became even worse in the land of Egypt, so the whole land, meaning every person in it, came to Joseph to be supplied because the famine was powerful in the whole land. It's very repetitive, a lot of repetition, and I think the sense that the Torah is trying to get across is a market that keeps dropping and dropping, and every time you think your stocks are going to keep going up, there's no end in sight. It keeps going lower and lower and lower. We are now up to chapter 42, and we are still in the fourth aliyah, so the story of the famine continues. But the camera viewpoint, the narrative viewpoint, switches back to Jacob, back to essentially the land of Canaan, for the first time in many chapters, and in fact the first time in many, many actual years. Vayar Yaakov ki esh shever b'mitzrayim, vayomer Yaakov levanav lama titra'u. And Jacob saw that there was food, supplies in Egypt, and Jacob said to his sons, why should you titra'u, which literally means make yourselves appear or make yourselves look. The word titra'u is very difficult, as it is in the reflexive, the hitpa'el form of the verb to see. Most of the commentaries, many commentaries, say that the sense is, why should you make yourselves appear to be, why should you make yourselves appear to be as if you have food? That is, you pretend to the other Canaanite, countries, not countries, but, cities and national groups or tribal groups inside the land of Canaan, you're pretending as if you have food. So stop making yourself look as if everything's okay when it's not. This actually is more to it than meets the eye, but to sort of get to the point, I'll have to take a look at what Ibn Ezra points out, and what he says is that the word titra'u, he points out, is used in the Book of Kings to mean to confront somebody in battle, to take somebody on in battle, as if you sort of face them in the field of war. So according to this, what Jacob may be telling them is, listen, you've been fighting over morsels with the longer local Canaanites. That is, how long are you going to continue going to war over little tiny morsels here and there? And maybe you'll even win. But perhaps you should stop thinking like warriors and behave differently. And I think the sense is that the brothers were warriors. I mean, we know that from previous stories. And the fact that they are warriors will actually give us some insight as to why Joseph does accuse them of being spies and warriors who are out to conquer Egypt. But in the meantime, let's continue. Vayomer, and he said, so Jacob is still talking, and once again, as we saw in the last Aliyah, why the interruption? Jacob was already talking, so why does it have to say, and he spoke if he was already speaking? I think the reason is that after he told them, Lama titra'u, it's not really a command, it's more of advice. You know, why are you behaving this way? Which I said, according to Ibn Ezra, means why are you behaving in this militaristic way, fighting over little tiny scraps of food that are left over, when there's a different way to handle this? I think the response is that they could hold out in a famine-ravaged land. I think maybe what they said to their father, although we don't really hear it from them directly, is, listen, you're coming up, you want to come up with a different way, but we're telling you this is what we know and this is how we can survive in this land. So Jacob says, Hine shamati ki yesh shever b'mitzrayim, redu shama v'shivru lana mishama v'nichya v'lo namut. Behold, I have heard that there are supplies in Egypt. Go down there and get supplies from there. Literally, shivru means to purchase or either to sell or to buy. But I like the word supplies. So, and go down there for the supplies, so we will live, and we will not die, velo namut. Now, there is a midrash about the word redu. He says, go down, redu. And redu has a gematria. It counts in Hebrew counting. It counts the number 210, which, according to midrash, is a prediction of the 210 years that Jacob's children and their children's children would serve, would be in bondage in Egypt. And before we dismiss the Midrash or a Gematria, this numerical game, as being, you know, not serious, let's think about the deeper meaning of that Midrash, which is that the brothers do not want to go down to Egypt. Jacob cannot simply say, Lechu, go down. He has to say, Redu, you must go down. They know the dangers, and Jacob is aware that they know the dangers. Why else would they want to sit around and fight for morsels in the land of Canaan, as Ibn Ezra says, and I think really makes sense here. And the fact that they were being militaristic, that they were kind of going to war, or little tiny skirmishes in order to gather food in their own country, to my mind, it solves the seeming redundancy of the words, v'nichyeh v'lo namut, we will survive and not die. I think what he's saying is that the brothers thought that fighting with the locals was better than going down to Egypt, where they can lose themselves completely. And don't forget that they had many ghosts regarding the land of Egypt, where their sins lied, whether their sins were dead or alive, which we'll get to in a little bit. So Jacob may be saying, listen, you will live by getting food, and you won't die by spending all your time fighting it out here for very little food. So he uses the word redu because he knows that they know of the danger, and he has to force them to take the chance. And he says, v'nichyeh v'lo namut, which means do one thing and stop doing the other thing. So it's not a redundancy. It's actually talking about two different things, two different strategies, one accepted and one rejected. Vayirdu achei Yosef asara lishbor bar Mitzrayim. So the brothers of Joseph went down, 10 of them, to get food supplies from Egypt. Now, many commentaries comment on why it refers to them as brothers of Joseph and why it mentions that they are 10. The second question is easier according to the pshat, the plain sense and context of these verses, since we are about to, in the next verse, be told that Binyamin doesn't go down. The youngest son, Rachel's second son, and Joseph's full brother does not in the end go down to Egypt. So this foreshadows that fact by saying that only 10 of them went. But even referring to them as the brothers of Joseph really makes sense in context. First of all, Joseph is the lead character of this whole drama, and even though our camera is now focused on Jacob and Canaan, there's no question that Yosef is the central character of the story. Nonetheless, there's another psychological factor of calling them the brothers of Joseph. They know they sold their brother into slavery in Egypt, and as Menachem Liebtag teaches, it was not necessarily a direct sell, but they know that they were either directly or indirectly involved in the process. Their blood guilt lies in that land of Egypt. So going down to Egypt psychologically forces them to confront their ghosts. They are the brothers of Joseph. They did sell him either directly or indirectly into slavery. So the fact that the Torah says these are the brothers of Joseph, maybe it's the Torah identifying their psychological issues, or maybe it's actually showing that this is the beginning of their repentance, that they identify themselves as the brothers of Joseph. Listen, we have to go down to Egypt, and we know what we did there, what we caused to happen there. And therefore, we must admit who we are, the brothers of Joseph. We are going to have to confront our ghosts one way and the other. And that means that they have to start to be as loyal to him, dead or alive, as Benjamin was, as Benjamin would have been to his full brother, which is why it's about to talk to Benjamin. And there are midrashim like that. If you look at Rashi, you'll see they went down, prepared to buy him back. And I don't think that's meant to be literal, but I think it means that they're being forced to identify that Joseph was their brother and what they did was evil and needs to be, they need to do tshuva, they need to repent for it. Ve'et Binyamin achi Yosef lo shalach Yaakov et echav ki amar pen yikre'enu ason. And Benjamin, the brother of Joseph, Jacob, did not send with his brothers because he said, Jacob said, or really because he thought, Amar here really probably means thought, lest disaster, or maybe Ason means actually death, happened to him, that is, in Egypt. And the children of Israel came to get supplies or purchase goods amongst all the comers because there was a famine in the land of Canaan. Now, I think what that means is we know there's a famine in the land of Canaan, but what it's saying is that there was a heavy stream of caravans descending to Egypt to trade for food because everybody in the land of Canaan was affected by it. So you have to imagine a massive amount of traffic to go down and then to go back. So I would think that the brothers essentially, what it says here is Betoch HaBaim means they really joined in the caravans, which is surprising because they are really strangers in the land of Canaan. They really set themselves aside in the land of Canaan and they fought battles against the Canaanites. But here they seem to all of a sudden be merging into the Canaanite, at least the financial economic structure, maybe to make themselves less distinctive when they get to Mitzrayim so they would be able to purchase like everybody else. And maybe again, the Torah is pointing out that rather than constantly fighting with the locals for scraps, they start to join the locals economically in their attempt to get food in a peaceful and more wise way from a geopolitical sense. And now the camera slips away from the brothers and returns to Joseph. The Yosef hu ha-shalit al ha-aretz hu ha-mashbir l'chol ha-aretz v'yavo achi Yosef ha-yishtachavu lo apayim artza. And Joseph was the regent over the land. He was the supplier, i.e. of food to all the people of the land. And the brothers of Joseph came, i.e. to him, and they prostrated themselves with their faces on the ground. Vaya Yosef techav, vaya kirem, vayinaker alehem, vayidaber itam kashot, vayomer alehem, me'ayin batem, vayomru me'eretz kanaan lishbor ochel. And Joseph saw the brothers and he recognized him, but he made himself seem a stranger. That's a play on the word lahakir, which is to recognize, vayitnaker, and nochri. I'm sorry, vayakirim, to recognize, and vayitnaker, to be a stranger. And he spoke harsh words to them. Specifically, he said to them, where have you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan, in order to get food supplies to purchase food. Vayaker Yosef et Echav vehem lo hikiru. And while Joseph recognized his brother, they, in contrast, did not recognize him. The word, the letter vav there, vehem lo hikiru, really creates a contrast for grammatical reasons, which I'm not going to get into right now, but you have to read that as a but or as an in contrast and not an and. Vayizkor Yosef et Chalamot asher chalam lahem vayomer alehem raglim atem lirot et ervata aretz batem. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he dreamed about them, meaning specifically how in the second dream they were all stars and bowing down to them as they're currently doing right now. They're prostrate in front of them. And he said to them, you are spies, come to uncover the hidden places of the land, meaning to spy out its weaknesses and to find out the holes in the security systems so that you could come and attack it. Now, does this mean that because of the dream he plays harsh with them? Or does he remember the dream, period, and he decides to be harsh with them? The question is he being vindictive? Is he a vindictive and slightly sadistic person? Or, on the other hand, might he be following a master plan? That is, he remembers the dream and what the dream requested of him, the bowing the down and the wheat sheaves. The Ramban goes into this in detail, and therefore he's simply following the prophecy that began with his dreams by being harsh with them. Now, vindictiveness and sadism actually seems unlikely, not only because we don't want to believe that Joseph is vindictive and sadist, and only because later when the brothers say, oh, you're going to take vengeance on us, he says, I'm not going to, because God is the one who planned all this. But because it doesn't say textually, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't say, oh, and because he remembered that they threw him in the pit, therefore he dealt with them harshly. No, it says because he remembered the dream, he dealt with them harshly. On the other hand, it's a little hard to go along with the Ramban, because it's a little hard to say that, you know, he's kind of blindly following a dream and behaving in a strange way because he remembers some dream from 20 years ago. So there's a third opinion. One commentator says that the brothers were actually behaving in a warlike way. And that while all other buyers would split up and go take a look at the marketplace and disperse and shop around and show disunity, these 10 stayed always together. Now this is a result of their strong family and their strong religious connections, but also the fact that they were indeed, as I've said before, they were in fact a capable military force. They were a tribe that has been at war for a long time, whether it was Shechem and what happened there, or with the residents of Canaan, that we see that they were chased by them and they fought them, and at the end of the book, Yaakov hints that he took Shechem back with his keshen and with his sword and with his bow. They are a militaristic people, and they have to be, because they are strangers in a strange land. They go to Canaan with a mission from God that they have to live in this land, but they're not native Canaanites. They are not of the seven tribes. They are Aramites with their own religion and their own culture, and no doubt that they had to fight a lot to sort of hold on to their identity and their land. So the truth is, you know, when they come down with all these Canaanites, but they're not really Canaanites, there's actually a little bit to be suspicious about, and the way they're behaving and who they come down with. And maybe Joseph knows, as ruler of the land, that even though he knows who they are, the bottom line is, they look pretty suspicious. Finally, I prefer a fourth explanation, which is that the real problem is, and it kind of answers the question why Joseph never sent a letter back from the last, who knows, 20 years. Why didn't he ever send a letter back to say, hey, Dad, my brothers sold me into slavery, and, you know, what should I do? I mean, he couldn't have done it when he was a slave, but he was in charge of Potiphar's house, and now he's in charge of the whole country. He's got money and riches. Why not send a letter home? So I think his problem is he doesn't know what his ex-brothers are like. They come before him, and he doesn't know whether they still have murderous tendencies, whether they are unrepentant for their sins, and whether ultimately their father is either too weak or complicit in the fact that the brothers are ready to essentially throw him into a pit and leave him to either die or be sold into slavery. They're before him, but he doesn't know what people really they're like. Maybe they are no longer the kind of people that he would associate with. Maybe he's no longer, maybe they are the kind of people that would knock over a country pretending to be purchasers, and in fact being an advanced mission to take over a country. And furthermore, what about his brother? He's not there. And why isn't he there? Is it possible that the brothers treated all of Rachel's kids poorly? That they treated Benjamin with the same contempt and they excluded him? Maybe they didn't kill him, but did they exclude him just the way that Yosef was excluded? I'm going to get more into this possibility as well, that essentially Joseph is testing them, whether in order to try to get them to repent or whether because he himself does not know what to make of them. I'll discuss this more as we continue. Vayomru elav lo adoni va'avadecha ba'u lishbor ochel. There again, the vav of adecha means rather or but. So they said to him, no, my master, rather your servants, meaning us, which is a polite way to refer to oneself, your servants have come to get food supplies, meaning that and nothing else. We're not here to run a raid, to do a military raid. Kulanu b'nei ish echad nachnu. I think this may mean, you know why we're behaving in this way that seems so unified and almost militaristic? Because we're all sons of the same man. Kinim anachnu, lo hayavadachem raglim. We are all sons of the same father. We are honest. Your servants, meaning us, have never been spies. Which, of course, is not exactly true if you count what happened to Shechem. But in the context of invading a country like Egypt, it's true enough. And again, I think this fits very well into this whole idea that they're behaving like a military unit. The question is, why do they bother mentioning it? What does this have to do with anything? How does the fact that they're all brothers prove anything to Yosef? That's always been a question. I think the answer is, the reason why we're behaving in this way, the reason why we look suspicious and like some kind of unified force, is because we all have the same father. And it's possible that even in those days, having one father with 10 sons may have been unordinary enough. And what they're saying is, we're not a platoon. We are brothers. Vayomer Aleihem lo. Ki ervat ha'aretz batam lirot. But he, Joseph, said to him, untrue. Rather, it is the secret places of the land that you have come to see. I kind of skipped over when previously he mentioned ervat ha'aretz, but I don't know why Joseph is using a sexual metaphor here. The word erva is a sexual term, means a private place, a genitals, essentially. I don't think he's hinting at Shechem here. That doesn't really fit. Maybe he's just trying to be evocative and trying to evoke a strong response from the brothers. So he uses very, very graphic terms. I don't know. Vayomru shneim asar avadecha achim anachnu b'nei ish echad be'eretz Kanaan v'hinei akaton et avinu hayom ve'echad enenu. So now they kind of go to a different place. Not only are we 10 brothers, but in fact, your servants, they say, are part of 12 brothers. All of the same man in the land of Canaan. But behold, our youngest brother is with our father today, and another one is no more. Perhaps, again, they're trying to convince him we are not a military force, but let us tell us more of your family, of our family life, to try to make us seem like just regular brothers who are on a nice, peaceful mission to buy food. And if we give you more details, then maybe we'll get out of this accusation. Remember, however, that Joseph has no idea what happened to Binyamin. And he thinks maybe the brothers sold him off too, another Rachel child, another child orphan from their mother, an outsider. So he may be very unhappy about the fact that they present themselves as the only sons of Jacob, when in fact they should have mentioned two more. So there may be an underlying context where they feel, oh, this is our brothers, we're the 10 sons of Jacob, and maybe they feel weird about it. He's angry about it, Joseph, and they feel weird about it because they realize that it's not really the truth. They just said that they're telling the truth and they forgot a very important fact, a fact that they would love to forget. They would love to forget their sins of selling Joseph into slavery and the fact that Binyamin suffered because of it. So maybe he's pressing to know what is really in their hearts, whether they will continue in their hatred against him, and whether they will continue to make Benjamin an outsider who is not considered a brother, or whether they will say, you know, sort of let it out of the bag that they do have a brother, and that Joseph was their brother. And that's exactly what's being said here. We did have another brother, a brother, and he's lost. And we have another young brother, and he's simply not here. And that may say a lot to Joseph as far as the potential redemption of the brothers. So while it's possible that Joseph is being vindictive and even sadistic, I don't think so. Joseph is an excellent diviner of the future, a genius of modeling and logistics, excellent in human nature, or he never would have been able to rise to the positions that he did over and over again. I think he is intentionally forcing his brothers to reveal themselves, to confront their guilt, assuming that they have any guilt to confront, which he'll find out soon. And he'll find out that, in fact, they have guilt in truckloads, as we'll see in the coming Aliyot. Now, all of a sudden, so they mention the two missing brothers, and they call them brothers. So Joseph Yosef says, hey, I think there's hope. I think we have somewhere to go, but we're not there yet. If you look at the Midrash and Rashi sites, you'll see that it points to all kinds of extra dialogue back and forth. You're violent, you're not violent, you just proved what you did in Shechem was violent, and essentially it has Joseph playing psychological chess with them to get them to admit their true nature and feelings, and the fact that they do have a history of violence in general. Now the Midrash reads as if the words are spoken, but I think what the Midrash needs to be read metaphorically, in my humble opinion, that this was an unspoken, an in-between-the-line tension and communication that was being hashed out here. Who are you really? Do you understand who you really are? And the brothers are saying, this is who we really are, and wow, I'm not sure, we're happy about it. So Joseph said to them, this is exactly what I said about all of you, that you are spies. Now the simple sense, since we don't just want him repeating himself over and over again, is what he means, in my opinion, is that based on what you said, the extra information about your family, that there must be another brother, so if you can't produce him, you must be a liar, and therefore if you're a liar, you must be spies. But, bezoti bachenu, che paro im teitzu mizeh. So you can look at this negatively, that it says, with this you can be tested by the life of Paro. You will not escape this situation, as you'll never get out of here alive unless your young brother comes here. On the other hand, there's a positive side to this. If you can prove what you said is true, then I'll assume you're honest and you will get out of this situation. Shilchu mikem echad v'yikach et achichem v'atem heyasru So send from amongst you one person, one brother, to bring your missing brother, while the rest of you are imprisoned. Wow, it's pretty tough stuff. He's going to throw the rest of them in prison. And again, prison was not a nice place to be. It was a place where people died very quickly. Then he says, your words will be tested if the truth is with you, and if not, meaning if you don't send the person to get him, or if you can't produce him, then by the life of Paro, you are spies. But yes, Sofo Tam El Mishmar Shloshi Amim, and he, Joseph, gathered them into the prison for 3 days. And I think what he's waiting for them to do is pick a single messenger. But they won't do it. No one is going to be chosen to be separated from the group. I think they think that it is unjust. Vayomer, why should they all be imprisoned for a doubt? Vayomer alehem Yosef, bayom ashlishi, zot asu v'chyu, et Elohim aniare. Joseph said to them on the third day, do this, meaning, okay, so you don't want to send one person? Fine, so do this instead. I have another plan for you. And then you will live. I fear Elohim. I fear Ha-Elohim. Now, to fear Elohim does not necessarily mean to fear God, meaning the God of Abraham, our one God. What we've seen, for instance, previously, is that when Avram said to Avimelech, I think you have no fear in this place, obviously he wasn't expecting Avimelech to be a monotheist, what it means is you have no basic morals. Elohim is not so much God, but that too, but an idea of a moral just system. Elohim also comes with the word judges who do the right thing. That is, if there's a place where there's no Elohim, it means other people's property are forfeit to the strongest power. There's no moral, there's no system. What the brothers may have said or intimated is that what you, Joseph, are doing by keeping us in prison, by imprisoning 9 people without cause, essentially, and sending one to satisfy your whim, means that you have no fear of Elohim. It means that you are a tyrant, not, and what you've said is not worthy of an ethical ruler. And when Joseph sees them say this, I think this is also a test trying to push them to see whether they are scattered or whether one person will abandon the others. So maybe Joseph is satisfied by their strength of character and by their strength of unity and their knowledge of right and wrong. So what he says is, I too fear God. I too fear Elohim. And now I'll give you a different plan. So God willing, tomorrow in the next Aliyah, we'll see exactly what that plan is.